And that's why I now carry two extra pairs of pants with me everywhere I go. Yeah.
That's great, Jim. Just promise me you won't use that as the intro bumper thing for the show.
You know, you're not the boss of me, but fine. I won't use it as the intro for today's show.
Right. Whatever. Look, anyway, look, Jim, I am really uncomfortable with countenancing a monument of idolatry this year.
What? Why do you talk like it's 1646 or 1689? I forget which one's better. David, we're not going to counterfeit any monocles. This is going to be a short, simple Christmas episode. We do this every year. Don't freak out on me, all right?
Right. That's the problem. I'm not comfortable with our show celebrating or paying homage to Christmas. I have a dispute against that Popish ceremony.
Popish? Okay. You are really hard to work with sometimes, and I feel like it's time for me to finally tell you that. Okay? Do you know that? Like at least twice a year. Anyway, what's changed, by the way? What's different about this year? We've done Christmas stuff in past years.
I don't know. I guess this year, you know, I'm going to a new church and my position is more common here. And maybe I want to look good in front of my friends. Maybe it's peer pressure. Maybe it's just that my discovery of people like me has made me more confident in my views. I don't know.
Fine. Okay. I'll scrap the Rudolph the Covenanter reindeer and you're a mean one, Mr. Puritan. How about if we just replay Christmas skits like from 2 years ago? Can we do that?
Yeah, I guess that would be okay.
Wait, why would that be okay? I really expected you to fight me on that one.
Oh, it's just that I told you I wasn't comfortable countenancing Christmas.
Countenancing? Would you talk normal? Like more good? Like more gooder, please?
One of these days, Jim, I'm going to write a treatise about you.
Has this ever happened to you?
Oh, hi. Thanks for the Christmas card. I'm glad we're finally on the list. Took you long enough to put us on there, don't you think?
Or this.
Oh, looks like the Hendersons aren't giving us a Christmas card this year. But it looks like they're giving the cards out to the Hasingers and the Haberstams and the Hornings. Oh, wow. What did we do to make them hate us so much? Or this.
So how did your holiday season go?
Oh, you know, pretty good. We got like 145 Christmas cards because we're really blessed and loved by everyone. We're like really on the inside with everyone. Yeah, we're pretty important. So how many did you get?
4.
Oh, bummer. Looks like you might be on the outs popularity-wise. Maybe you should try harder to be liked next time. Yeah, okay, bye-bye now.
There is nothing quite like navigating on a yearly basis the turbulent, calamity-filled waters of that never-ending problem known as Christmas card politics. It's hard to keep up, to know all the rules, the do's, the don'ts. One mistake could land you in a social prison of never-ending sadness and darkness. You don't want to be that family that misses out on all the social capital one receives with a huge stack of Christmas cards. But thanks to the engineers at Briggs Laboratories, you don't have to anymore. Coming this Christmas season, we are proud to present the Christmas Card Cheer Enhancement Program. With our help, we guarantee you will climb straight to the top of the holiday hipster ladder of social superiority for only 3 easy payments of $99. Don't look up on that social ladder. Look down at everyone else. Feel like your Christmas card haul is low this year? Well, our team of holiday cheer engineers will make up cards from your friends without their permission, even if they have no intention of sending them to you. Feeling lazy this year? No problem. We can make your cards for you using the latest in cutting-edge social engineering technology, ensuring that you get the best sphere of influence you can possibly imagine for future favors. Feeling slighted by being cut off from the pastor's Christmas card list? Well, for an extra $99 payment, we will infiltrate the U.S. Postal Service and intercept all of their incoming cards to ensure they feel the biggest impact from the mistake they made. Yes, turn that frown upside down and make your Christmas card game A1. We also offer counseling services when the holidays are over while you deal with the crushing weight of depression that comes along with being an insecure social butterfly. With the Christmas Card Cheer Enhancement Program, you can count on us to get you back to where you need to be. Merry Christmas.
The Lightest Form of Flogging podcast reluctantly presents a new reading of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas by Clement Clark Moore, as read by your favorite flogging personalities, unedited with behind-the-scenes content. We begin with Bill Hasinger.
Hi, I'm Bill Hasinger, formerly of Bill Hasinger's Pallet Depot.
Not necessary, Bill. Not necessary. Please just read the copy. We have to get into this story, so please.
'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
No echo, Bill.
The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. There, I'm finished. Now there is a matter of my compensation.
Bill, we have to move this along. Can we talk about this later?
Fine. But this is not over.
Next up, Matt Chandler.
When out on the roof there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutter, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wandering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. Well done, Matt. Your hand motions were a bit much, but we can work with this. Now please get out.
Oh, get you! I seem to remember handing you your behind last time I saw you. I'd watch yourself, son.
I'm not sure what you're referring to, but that doesn't sound like anything I would ever participate in. I don't like people handing me things or looking at me. Next up, we have Werner Herzog. Jim, no one else knows who this is. What is up with you?
Well, he's sitting there staring at us. We might as well have him do his stanzas, David. Please, show some respect.
Respect this.
With a little odd driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be Saint Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away all. Thank you for this opportunity to bring levity to a cold world, devoid of joy, cheer, and sunshine. But before I go back to the void, I would like to see the baby.
The what?
I would like to see the baby. Bring it to me.
David, what is going on?
He means Baby Yoda. This guy is in The Mandalorian. His character hires the Mandalorian to get the baby. You would know this if you saw the show, but you refuse, and I will never know why. Werner Herzog is in it, and you're the only person who knows who he is.
Yoda is the baby in the show?
No. Well, yes, but no. I mean, possibly yes, but possibly no, and yes.
Werner? I just know that I want the baby. I want him. He is heartbreakingly beautiful.
All right. Thank you, Werner, for that. Next up, Hellcat Maggie.
As droid leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount up to the sky. So up to the housetop the choristers they flew, and with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. Thank you, boys, for all the time you gave me on your show. Now please accept this fine bottle of Hellcat Maggie Irish whiskey as a token of my esteem.
Mrs. Cat, the bottle is empty.
Oh, that's right, boyo. I said a bottle. Do not present yourselves as ungrateful to me. Here, come a little closer. I sharpened my teeth before I came here.
You drank the whole thing before you came here, didn't you?
Oh, daddy boy, the pipe.
Next up we have Martin Lloyd-Jones.
He was dressed all in fur, from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back. He looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed, like a bowl full of chili. Okay, am I done with this rubbish? We need me to waste more of my time. I am a busy preacher and I have things to do.
How? You're dead.
Fair point. I'll go hang out in your green room. Anything decent to eat down there?
Jim brought some cocktail weenies.
Oh, that cheap creep.
Okay, next up, presidential candidate Bernie Sanders.
Well, he was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A wink of his eye, a twist of his head, soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, and went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, and then turned with a jerk. And laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving up a nod, up the chimney, he rose. Okay, now that I am done, I require your wallets so I can go get some lunch. Come on, cough it up.
I don't think that's how it works, Bernie.
What do you mean? Why pay for something you want when you can use other people's money against their will? Seems like the right way to do it.
Just do it, David. The logic checks out.
Yeah, seems fine. All right, here you go, sir.
Goodbye. I'll be back.
And last up, we have Deep Voice Man to close us out.
He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Welcome to the lightest form of flogging annual Christmas, end of year special, where we celebrate plenty of Christmas, end of year cheer, jolly frivolity, and holly holodecking for you and yours. Consider it our gift to you for being such loyal listeners all these years. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some old and some new. Actually, we're not doing anything new. Enjoy some old Christmas cheer from David and I. End of year bits, skits from the Lightest Form of Flogging podcast. David, take it away.
As Jim said, welcome to the Lightest Form of Flogging. I am your Grinch host, David. And sitting across the country from me at a contractually negotiated 824 miles is my co-host Jim, who just introduced us and who recently told me that he wouldn't touch me if he had an 824 mile long pole.
Just so we're clear. Though if I could pull that off, it'd be kind of cool. Like all of a sudden you're just kind of typing on your computer working and into the window comes this like this pipe.
I'd have to move another mile away.
It just gently like caresses your cheek and then goes right back out the window and that's it.
Can we just not talk about you caressing me again?
It's a pipe. No.
No, you get the reference though. You do get the reference, right?
No, what is that?
I'm the Grinch.
I wouldn't touch you if I had a 39 and a half foot pole.
No, I didn't get it, but now I do.
Well, now the listeners do too, just in case it was too opaque. Now the listeners,
yes. We have to explain our references in order for our listeners to follow along. Hey, show.
References.
End of your special. What?
Nothing. That was a reference.
Okay. It's just me talking. Hey, show, we're in it. End of your special. Very happy. 121. Okay. We're over the 120 mark. This is it. The rest of the show, the rest of the remaining episodes, is just going to be downhill from here. Well, I'm pretty excited. I'm full of lots of end of year cheer. By the time folks hear this, it'll be a day after the end of your day, the special end of your day. So hopefully everyone had a good time. David does not wish that you had a good time. In fact, I hear that this is probably going to be the most depressing Christmas ever. And Presbyterians like David are okay with this happening.
It's the best Christmas gift we've had.
It's the best Christmas gift you could possibly give to them. It's signaling the end of this popish holiday we all call Christmas. Mm-hmm. Anyways, David, so we have an interesting show today. A couple of bits and skits. One in particular I'm excited about. This will be the third year running that we play our famous flogging Christmas carol. Is that what we called it? Or a flogging carol? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Flogging. Anyways, it was our rendition or parody of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Worked real hard on it. Very proud of it. We're going to play it again for you all. So all you loyal listeners who have been listening to us for a long time, I'm sorry if you're bored by it, but you're just going to have to take it. All right. For all of our new listeners who haven't heard it before, we're going to go ahead and play that later on the show. But first, we're going to go ahead and go into follow-up. So, David, do you want to go ahead and start us off? I have a couple of items. I imagine you do as well.
It was episode 24, if you were wondering, was the first time we played.
It's a long time ago.
I think.
Yeah. I think it's funny enough to play it a third time.
Yeah. I thought there would be a name here for the skit, but we did not have a name for the skit. So you can name it now.
Flogging Christmas Carol. That's what it's called.
Or Flogging End of Year Carol.
Well, no, it's part of the parody. You know,
right.
Okay. We don't want to countenance that kind of stuff. So, part of the joke, yes, is me mentioning Christmas all the time and David correcting me. And that's part of the joke. So,
yep. So we're doing follow up now, right?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do follow up.
Okay. Do you have follow up?
I have a couple of points.
Oh, sweet. Yeah? You should start.
Folks, spoiler alert. David and I are going to talk about Mandalorian. You are hereby warned. This is a spoiler oncoming. The finale for that show aired last Friday. Spoiler-free discussion will resume at 29 minutes and 15 seconds. So, David.
Nice.
I've told you that I'm sick and tired of the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda going on missions.
Right. Like doing stuff.
A specific mission where they were commissioned to do something.
They weren't commissioned. They were not commissioned that one episode. Mission. We talked about this.
Everything is mission when you have a Baby Yoda. This last mission.
How long did you think? How long have you been waiting to use that since last
week? I just made it up.
Okay.
Honestly. Okay. Okay. But this last mission, I'm totally okay with. if the mission is going to rescue Baby Yoda, I'll take it. I'll watch it.
Right.
But I was accidentally spoiled.
Oh no.
So how this, yeah, I know. And it
was really hard this time because we didn't watch it on Friday because Sarah had a ladies' night. And so we watched it on Saturday, but like all day Friday and all day Saturday, I was like anything that even remotely smelled of Star Wars. I was just like, scroll past it. Go, go, go.
So the reveal at the end was a true surprise for you.
Yes. Yes. Was it cool? Okay. I knew there was going to be reveal of a past Star Wars character because I couldn't escape like catching a header that was like, you won't believe who shows up, you know? And of course that's a known character, but yeah, I was not, at first I forgot when the timeline was. And since we're in spoiler land, I thought it was Obi-Wan. And then I was like, no, wait,
really?
This is later. This is way later. Obi-Wan's dead.
That the timeline of the Mandalorian was in Obi-Wan's era.
No. So I think I just made a simple
just a momentary
like,
thing.
It was just a momentary like, oh wait, no, I know when this is. It's not, that's about, I just right, thought okay. the guy kind of moved like Obi-Wan in a couple of there were things about how he came onto the scene that reminded me of Obi-Wan in episode 4. And then he had the green lightsaber that Obi-Wan had. And of course Luke got a green lightsaber eventually. And then I realized before the reveal, like, no, that doesn't make sense.
Okay. Well, anyways, folks, Luke Skywalker was revealed at the end of this last episode of The Mandalorian, and it was pretty awesome. I would say of the facial CGI rendering things that we've seen in Star Wars so far, the guy from Rogue One, we saw Leia and
Tarkin.
Grand Moff Tarkin, I believe. Those were, the Leia one was pretty good.
Did you say Grandma Tarkin?
What's that?
Did you say Grandma Tarkin?
I said Grand.
He's Moff a man, Tarkin. Sir.
Grandma Tarkin, when she showed up in Rogue
That's
One.
That's a new character for us.
One of us is going to have to figure out that voice, but we can make that work.
Evacuate now in our moment of triumph. I'm afraid you overestimate that chances.
That's pretty good, actually.
Thank you.
I was pretty amazed. I knew it was coming, but it still like had me. The music, I think, was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
The makers of Mandalorian knew that at this moment, they were probably going to pull on the heartstrings of the old school Star Wars fans because they were going to give them a Luke Skywalker that they felt they were deprived of from The Last Jedi, which you didn't feel at all because you were perfectly satisfied. With The Last Jedi. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And you were really happy that Luke was devastated and depressed. You were like, yeah, this is great. That was David in the theater. Everyone was like, what is this? He was like, yeah. But anyways, it was just perfect. I really enjoyed it. It was very satisfying. I take back everything I've said.
He didn't even milk anything.
Yeah. When Mando took off his helmet, I've noticed that the three times we have seen The Mandalorian, the first time he looked like junk. Like my kids were like, he looked weird. Like his facial hair was like all matted on his face. I'm like, well, he was just went through a battle. He probably didn't have time to shave or whatever.
Right.
The second time we saw him, it was a much better clean presentation. And for the finale, he looked just like a movie star. I'm just like, this is an interesting progression. Like the first time everyone saw him, people were like, oh.
There was somebody at my church
who was, I love the actor,
who was like, why would they have him take his helmet off if he's not going to be good looking?
Yeah, I mean, if I went through a battle, I don't think I would look that great. I don't look that great already.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine you looking worse.
David cannot imagine it. but anyways, he looked cool. Everything worked. It was a really great finale. And I'm glad that the success of The Mandalorian is so great that it spawned 15 TV shows. That's a testament to its popularity and its influence. But it's almost like that's the Star Wars reboot that everybody wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knew that they were precisely going to get. That being said, I am a huge fan of pretty much all three of the movies. Last Jedi I have some reservations for, but I think the overall product that they produced was pretty good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the TV Star Wars, I'm all on board now. It's too easy to mess up the movies. I don't know why. It just seems like the capacity for error on a movie is much greater than a TV show. I'm pretty sure you could probably explain that, but the TV shows seem to be working for Star Wars, and hopefully they're pretty good.
Well, in general, I think the movies that are not episodes, if you will, that aren't episodes 7, 8, 9, like Rogue One was a good Star Wars movie. Like I feel like it really lived up to, hey, this is a Star Wars movie. Solo was still, I mean, it wasn't great. And part of that, I think the further you get away from trying to carry out some part of the original trilogy story, the further you get away from that, so that now it's happening in the Star Wars universe with known species and technologies, the easier it is, because people are a lot more forgiving when, like when you write for Luke, people are expecting him to be Luke, but like Lucas understood Luke, Lucas wrote Luke. So like, coming along and writing something that's consistent with Luke is harder than coming along or even Han Solo than coming along and writing something that's consistent for some completely other character who just happens to be the same species or religion or what have you as an existing Star Wars character. So I think that's a big part of, like, we just have such high expectations because we know these characters. And even if I feel like even if they nailed it in the way that Lucas would have written it, we'd all be wondering, like, I don't know if Luke would have done that, but we would trust Lucas to do it because, well, he's George Lucas. He invented the character.
Right. Yeah. You're right. There is that inherent trust in there, and it's not there when what's-his-face writes. I get it. But also, one more thing before we move on. Like, is there anybody, whether it's the Empire or the First Order, is anybody upset that, like, these super weapons that they invest, like, trillions of dollars into, like, get 5 minutes of screen time and then are completely destroyed? Like those black droid dudes,
yes.
They look pretty massively awesome, like deadly. Like
they were like, so good.
I'm like, this is like a really cool, it's like the first time I've seen like a weapon that like actually has high stakes to it that could actually cause harm to the heroes.
Right.
And like Mando barely got away with beating one of them.
Yep.
And then there's just a bunch of them. And then they got sucked out of that cargo bay or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, my kids don't care, but I'm just like, oh, come on. I'm just like, this is too easy. This is way too easy.
No, I knew they were coming back.
I should have realized it, but as soon as they came back, I was like, okay, all right. That was too cheap to get rid of them that fast.
No, when he sets it on fire with his flamethrower and it just like slowly looks to camera. Sarah and I were like getting goosebumps. We're just like, oh, this is so cool.
Like he extinguished the fire on him. Like, okay, this is for real. Finally, there is an antagonist that has the power to actually cause harm to the heroes. Because nothing can, even Death Stars aren't that, well, unless you lived on Alderaan.
Which one?
And it was probably bad.
I but love like, you know, that first line where they just kind of, they keep making fun of the Star Wars movies. Like how bad stormtroopers are at shooting and how many Death Stars there have been. Like, it's just like, it's just kind of subtly acknowledging what we all know.
Have you gotten the impression that a mutual friend called Fian E. Allen, his name rhymes or sounds similar to that. He said, Jim, do you notice that like stormtroopers have somehow become even more useless? I mean, they have waves of stormtroopers coming at these guys and they're all shot.
It's true.
You know, with one blaster in the shoulder and they're dead.
Oh, that's how it's always been, though. I remember YouTube videos making fun of how easy the stormtroopers died like 15 years ago.
Well, they haven't gotten better training. Anyways, I'm done with Mandalorian. Just wanted to geek out with you for a little bit. Was excited. Great episode. Very happy. Just a great show.
I agree. My week of that episode was, and maybe we're going to find something out that makes this make sense. But I have another VFX critique, but I'm not going to get into that. My one critique was when Baby Yoda and R2 like have the longest stare off in all of Star Wars history.
that was a long scene, wasn't it?
Just that part, because the whole ending was just a little bit too long. But I would have said nothing if they had cut the Baby Yoda and R2 thing in half. The only thing that makes sense to me is it was Obi-Wan and R2 who saved Baby Yoda when Anakin was going around killing the younglings. So Baby Yoda,
I thought it was Mace Windu.
Oh, you might be right. Anyway, the only thing that would make sense to me is if R2 was somehow involved in Baby Yoda's past. And we could find that out in the next episode, in the next season at some point, and it would make everything make why that scene was so long make sense. But without that piece of information, assuming it exists, I was just like, why are they staring? Is this just because they're two beloved Star Wars characters and we want to have them on the screen for a long time?
That's what I thought it was. It was just pointless banter because it would just make fans like go, they would geek out a little bit. But that's a great point. Have you gotten that from any sort of article or is that just David kind of, hey, this is how
I saw a headline of an article that was like something about how maybe, well, it was talking about Mace Windu having possibly saved Baby Yoda. And I think that was what kind of made my brain go, oh, like, it's entirely possible that during the Clone Wars or something, Baby Yoda was somehow carried to the planet that he was on or whatever by Mace, not during the Clone Wars. I know that doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean? It's entirely possible that Baby Yoda has or Grogu, as you would say, which is too close to Go-Gurt in my view, has a connection to R2.
All right. Well, that I will eagerly await next season to see what happens there. But that's a good theory.
Thank you. Like although it's worth noting that Baby Yoda would then have better memory than Obi-Wan, who when confronted with R2 said, I don't remember owning a droid. I saw a TikTok video that was like, I don't remember owning a droid. And then it just showed like cut after cut after cut of Obi-Wan interacting with R2 and R2 saving his life. And R2 is like, why you gotta play me like that?
I mean, Star Wars will be beloved forever, but there were a lot of story elements that were invented after the original trilogy.
It's not that hard to be consistent, you know?
Well, you're right. They could have done that. They probably should have
probably
done that, but
because there's just a lot
of R2-D2 and Obi-Wan,
a lot of inconsistencies.
You're right. But keeping R2-D2 and Obi-Wan separate for three movies, I guess would be kind of
well,
hard.
You don't have to keep them separate, but you also don't have to have Obi-Wan know his name and like rely on him to save his life two or three times.
Yeah.
Like even just once, I would have been like, oh, okay. A lot of people have saved this guy's life.
But like for most people, like if someone saves your life once, you remember
them forever. All right.
That one time that you and I were at Safeway and I was reaching for a Little Debbie and you slapped my hand.
And handed you insulin.
I do remember that. Yes.
This is what you need right now.
Yes. David saved my life. Anyways.
Let's see. Reasoning about things. So I was thinking about this as I was listening to the episode because I felt like I did a poor job of explaining how the way that you reason about or think about a thing can affect the conclusion that you come to. And I remembered a YouTube video that I saw where, I'll be honest with you, this was like 8 years ago and I couldn't find the video. I'm not even sure if it's a reliable source, but it is an interesting study in how people think about things, even if it's not true. If that makes sense, it's an interesting illustration. Yeah. So they were talking about how people in some parts of Africa do not perceive color in the way that we do, because for them, the subtle differences in color that they have to be able to pay attention to are in terms of hue value, if that makes sense. So like computers and actually people kind of like to think about color in terms of you have your hue where you go from like orange all the way over to red, all the way over to blue. Like you have this, the hue circle, that kind of thing. And then you also have the lightness, how bright or light is this color? And then you also have the saturation, like how, if it's blue, okay, how blue is it? If it's orange, how blue or how orange is it? Right. And we Westerners tend to most prominently notice things like lightness and saturation, but they were talking about this African tribe that primarily noticed hue. And so you could literally show them two colors that like we would look at and be like, oh, those are vastly different. But because of how this culture has, if you will, evolved over time and like what is important to them in terms of recognizing the difference between food that you eat and will keep you alive and food that you eat and will kill you, they saw things primarily on hue value. And so if we look at like a blue green and a green blue, like a blue that's slightly more green and a blue that's slightly less green, we're less likely to be able to tell the difference between those. Whereas this tribe could tell the difference between those really easily. But if you showed them like a burnt orange versus a bright orange, they might not be able to tell you that those are two different colors. And it's because like even their language around color has evolved in such a way that they don't even see these other colors. They don't see colors that we see, and we don't see colors necessarily that they see, because that's just not how we think or talk or reason about color. Was that interesting at all?
No, I was swallowing some scotch. That's
what
I was talking
about. What are you drinking there, Jim?
And apparently I swallowed it wrong, actually. Oh, that was good stuff too. Yes, but I'm trying to understand why you thought you were wrong then.
Oh no, not that I was wrong. I just felt like I didn't have a good illustration of it. And when I thought of this illustration, I thought, oh, I should slot that into follow-up because it relates to this series that we're talking about how the way that people reason about things affects what concepts they're willing to even entertain, let alone believe.
You were very thorough, and that's a good
thing. I try.
Okay. All right. Are we okay to move on?
We are. Wait.
Not necessarily.
What are you drinking there, Jim?
What? I'm drinking Chivas Regal 18. It's a blended scotch.
Okay.
18 years old. Not that expensive as far as 18-year-old scotches go. But it's only 40% ABV. However, it is just perilously drinkable. I mean, it's just, this stuff goes down really fast. You got to be careful. It is just one of the greater scotches. A lot of citrus in it. Great barley notes, good oak sugars, just great stuff. Really, really good.
Is that peated or not? I'm guessing not.
Not peated. Peated, not.
Can we do?
No, I like that. Peated or not. No, not peated at all.
That's just what I figured straight from how you described it. But
it's great. Great. Straight scotch with a little sherry. What do you
just
have?
Got some Evan Williams small batch, the 1780, whatever it is.
Great.
That's a really good, like, hey, I don't feel bad for drinking this because it's very, very cheap kind of whiskey, you know?
Yeah, which you might be tempted to feel with Evan Williams black or white. I don't think you should, but you might be tempted to think it. But with this stuff for just a couple bucks more.
Exactly.
I mean,
I think it's like $18 a bottle. And I've just been getting, I think since you recommended this, we may be on our second bottle. I've just been getting the 1.75 milliliter or 1.75 liter. Cause Sarah likes it too. And we use it in old fashions. Like it's just kind of an all purpose whiskey.
It's great whiskey. Yeah. It's usually a sign of bad things when you're buying the 1.5, 1.75 liters or the handles or the bottles with the handle. But I myself do it with Johnny Walker Black. So I can't
go. Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't have to drink it that fast. Like, well, and the other nice thing is
it's not, Sarah and I it's both, generally a better deal.
And Sarah and I both drink pretty much anything that we buy. So it tends to be gone twice as fast as like when you buy stuff probably, or maybe a quarter as fast.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, it's just like just in time ordering, right? You just, you know, you want some whiskey. So you go to the store and buy it and then you drink the bottle and then you buy another one. That's what most people should be doing. I, you know, started drinking after like purchase 178. So No, that's a fair criticism implied.
I think it was a joke, but anyway. You have a follow-up point, no?
Yes. Not necessarily a follow-up, just more of a call-out. We talked about a passing remark about libertarians last episode. Yep. Close personal friend, a great listener, longtime listener, Chris Ragsdale, commented on Slack, and this is just funny, so I just wanted to point it out. He said, and I quote, "My impression of libertarians in San Diego were they were supportive of gun rights so they could protect their weed." just a little ditty for you. Thank you, Chris. That was that's pretty good. I'm going to heretofore ask permission to use that in my normal life as a line, and I won't even credit you for it, but now I will. That's libertarian.
I feel like there's a lot of crossover between libertarians, not crossover in terms of people, but in terms of personality types, between libertarians and Tesla owners, where it's like the majority of them are jerks, but they may have a point.
That's fair as well. They may have a point on some things. They're just...
We'll all right. Next anyways. Up, I have when to use spectrum thinking. David Latchett had some critiques of me and my distinction here. And I realized that, honestly, I was kind of developing this thought technology, if you will, as we went throughout the episode. And I just wanted to clarify, there are definitely a lot of use cases for spectrum thinking. And I think if I can just try to say what I've learned from all the things he said in Slack, which you can read by going to Slack, I think what I want to say is that spectrums are good for measuring exactly one aspect of something. That could be something like height. It could be something like spiciness, maybe. It's when you say, oh, well, you know, something like liberalness is composed of 17 different factors, like their position on abortion and their position on gun rights and their position on all these different things. And so even though we have like 17 different things that you could hold all kinds of different positions on, we're gonna draw we're going to come up with a number that represents where you fall between the two extremes, where on the left you have opposed to everything and on the right you have for everything. And I think that when you start to do that, when you say, oh, I have this fairly complex matrix of things that composes what a given person's position on this is, but I'm going to scrap all of that and I'm going to draw two polar opposites and I'm going to say that there's a spectrum between them and you fall somewhere in between, I find that kind of thinking unhelpful. I think it's overused, and specifically it's used in situations where it causes more harm than good. But if you're trying to measure the height of a building or the size of a city, whether that's by the physical geographic size or whether that's the number of people in it, like eventually you end up quantifying things with numbers and coming up with spectrums, because that's the way that you measure things that can be quantified with numbers. I don't know if that makes any sense.
This is all. Oh, you,
okay. Do you have another point then? We can move on.
Sure. Thank you for clarifying that. We've all been waiting. Apparently, David has never gone to Arby's, or has gone once and it's been a long time ago, and you don't really know much about Arby's and don't know why people go there. But you asked a question on our Slack recently. Who?
I kind of did.
You asked a question about Arby's. Did. So. There's a spectrum here, I guess.
Where on the one hand, I did, and on the other hand, I didn't, but it's somewhere in between.
Anyways, a number of our Slack listeners chimed in with whether or not they liked Arby's or go there, and if they do, what did they get? And this was curious to me. I just wanted to point out that it was weird that you were like Data inquiring to us common folk, like, all right, who has gone to Arby's? And if you have gone to Arby's, have you enjoyed your dining experience at Arby's? And everyone is like, I like roast beef sandwiches. And you're like, ah, interesting, human. I too must try this out. And, I think most people have eaten at Arby's. I think it's fair to kind of have that slip through the cracks. I mean, with all the choices that we have. But that being said, Arby's is kind of like a, not quite McDonald's, but it's like a cultural icon. You know, the roast beef sandwich is pretty iconic from that place. No one else really does what they do in terms of that particular sandwich. Mm. And sandwich. So you, I believe, announced on Slack today that you have indeed visited Arby's, and I just wanted to see if you liked it or not.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't bad. My main problem with any kind of fast food is when it tastes really salty. I'm not big into really salty So I tend to like Wendy's more than the other fast food, more than the other burger places. Okay. And I tend to, you know, I like Chick-fil-A. I like Qdoba or what do you call it? But if it's too salty, it's fine. And Arby's. Okay. So I had the half pound roast beef with cheddar. And I had...
Dang, what? David. Dang, that is like... That's hardcore. I mean, if you want an opinion...
Look, I was hungry.
I don't think I would go to the beef and cheddar. I mean, they're famous for their beef and cheddar, but I was hoping you would... Next time, just get a regular roast beef sandwich. But okay. Other than that, how did it go?
And I also got their loaded fries. And again, it was like I liked the experience because it's kind of neat to... Yeah. You're so used to eating things that are ground up. This felt like your teeth are just tearing directly into the flesh of an animal because it kind of comes off in flakes.
That's a good
point. And so that was nice because I like the meat experience, if you will. It reminds my body that I'm eating something that's going to sustain me. And then, the fries, I think were probably my favorite part. It was like bacon and mayonnaise and cheddar and like just a bowl full of calories. Everything was just a little too salty though. That was my main critique. Okay. I would give it a 5.5 out of 10.
All right. Well, that's fair.
Or an 11 out of 20.
Maybe next time, just for me, just get a regular roast beef sandwich. Just get the smallest one they offer and give that a shot. Without the cheese, I don't think it'll be as salty. And that's a pretty loaded, it's a hefty sandwich. I mean, you got to really take time and effort and creativity and focus to eat that. So
that's how Homer Simpson once said, went. If I can keep Arby's down, I can keep this down.
Oh boy. Yeah. Did you enjoy the acid reflux after Arby's is known for that? Anyways, you're up.
Hold on. Arby's. I must have referenced this in an episode because I thought this was in a blog post. Or wait, maybe hold on. Projects. No, about. So this all happened, and this I guess can be a follow-up point if you want, Jim. This all happened because on my about page, I said, I launched a new blog and the rest of it lives again. And a paragraph from my about page reads, as for the creator, in no particular order, I'm a Reformed Presbyterian Christian, a member of the RPCNA, a designer, a web developer, app maker, photographer, husband, and beard haver. I've never been to fishing and I'm not sure why people eat at Arby's. If you want to know more about me, ..
You had to shoehorn that joke in there, but you couldn't put podcaster in that list.
Oh, right. I should put that in that list. Look, this whole, all the copy on this, I was trying to experiment with new web technologies, which was my primary reason for launching this blog. Because I want to build our church a new website and I was trying to figure out what technology I wanted to use it for.
Okay. So is that, I mean, so you don't really have anything you want
to
say?
I would like to write about photography and Apple and, actually I want to write a blog post about these technologies that I'm using because I think it might help other churches learn how to create other Reformed churches learn how to create, better websites for their, particular congregation. So I have, I feel like this is like a David writes a post once every 2 months and it's basically never about theology kind of situation.
Okay. I was just going to say, like, what does it feel like to launch this blog and to have it not work?
Oh, initially, yeah.
Like most schlubs just go under WordPress. they write their post and it's published and everyone sees it. You, an expert in all things tech, launch a blog and no one can see it. So I'm just pointing out
I didn't
that irony
launch
there.
It. I just sent the link to Slack.
Okay.
And after I sent the link, some DNS changes that I had set into place happened. And then I walked away and they happened while I had walked away. And then you guys popped onto it and you're like, why doesn't this work?
Accidentally turned on Skynet.
That's true.
All right. I'm sure.
Did we just do a you follow? Yeah, we did an Arby's follow-up point. That was a you follow-up point. So next up, I wanted to clarify from last episode, I was talking about the idea of how if you have a set of presuppositions or a core set of things that you believe about the world. And one of those is challenged. It can be very troubling to you because it makes you wonder if you should challenge all of the other ones. If you should, you know, if my belief that Republicans are good and Democrats are bad is challenged and I find out that that's not actually true and there are some bad Republicans and maybe there are even some good Democrats, who knows? if that's challenged, then like you can feel like, well, then should I question like whether the Bible is true or whether God is real or what have you? And it just occurred to me that a lot of that does come down to authority. So if your basis for believing something is how long or how passionately you believe it, then all those things that you have believed for a long time or believe really passionately will come into question, because that's your primary reason for believing them, because I believe this forever or because I really strongly believe this. But if you believe in authorities outside of yourself, like the scriptures, then when somebody challenges something that you have held for a long time and held quite passionately, but you can't say is directly like, this is what a verse in scripture says, you don't necessarily feel the same way. It can be, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a way to hold things strongly and passionately, but to understand that you hold them for different reasons. I hold certain opinions because I believe the Bible is true. And I believe that the Bible is true because the Holy Spirit has convinced me that the Bible is true. But when it comes to something that I also believe to be fairly fundamental, like, I don't know, Apple is better than Android. Like if that were to be challenged tomorrow, because it comes from a different authority source, it wouldn't bother me. Like I would struggle with it because I believe it passionately and have believed it for a long time, but I wouldn't feel like that is like some core tenet of things that I believe that's going to cause my entire tower of beliefs to fall. And I realize that's a silly example. I couldn't come up with a good one on the fly.
Okay. Well, that works.
But I don't know. Does that make sense?
I think it does.
You got another
excellent. Yes. I want to desperately ask David about Lost, but I can't, so I won't. Because we're not going to talk about Lost every time. I want to talk about Lost every time you might.
We're still enjoying it. Can I just say that?
We're not going to... Sure. But I'm not going to respond directly to that. I'm just going to say we're going to move on. But I just want you to know that I really want to ask you, but I'm not.
So anyways, we'll do it next week, Jim. Every other week, good?
Okay. Sure.
Okay.
can I call you after the episode so we can talk about it? No. So last week I mentioned a Josh Groban song that I really liked. It was in Italian. I couldn't think of the name of the song. I looked it up. It's called Alla Luce del Sole.
Mm.
And I'm sending the link to David as we speak so he can put it on the show notes. This is a Josh Groban song that I really like, but I couldn't think of the name. So there you go. There's the name. And this was a fun YouTube session because I wandered my way into some Andrea Bocelli.
Mm.
Have you heard of Andrea Bocelli?
He's one of those tenors, right?
No, he's I think he is a tenor, but he's Italian. He's blind and he has a wonderful singing voice.
No, I've heard the name and I was aware that he was a tenor. That's it. I've probably heard things from him because my dad is big into tenors. That sounds weird, but whatever.
Okay. Not really?
Good.
I think I know what you're saying. No, he's great.
He likes 10 or 12 of them.
This kind of... Hey! This just speaks to my emotional state right now. I saw one Andrea Bocelli musical video.
Oh, music video.
One of his newer songs.
With the dancers.
And he was a duet with his son. And about 12 seconds into it, I...
Did anybody twerk?
Anyways, so you go ahead.
I have a question for Jim, who is interacting with his family. I have a question for Jim, which is, Jim, you last week slipped in an as you would say on me. Yes. And I didn't even notice really because I use these all the time. And it occurred to me, Jim, you got, as you would say, from me. And I'm wondering if that's just a podcast thing or if you use that at all in real life.
I think I've used it a couple times in real life, but I know I'm doing it. And I like halfway through it, I'm thinking, should I be doing this? Like, it's funny to me.
Yes.
And I do it for the laughs with you. But I think I'm going to go ahead and sell this as serious. So I make the decision halfway through the phrase and I'm going to keep going with it. I'm going to sell it. But it's only been a couple of times. So yeah, I use it with you just for fun, for the joke, but in real life, just a handful of times.
I use it whenever I catch myself saying something kind of douchey. Like if I'm using a phrase, like we'll circle back around to that. I'll just be like, as you would say. So it pins the like,
do you like laugh?
I think people are just a little confused.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I get that. It would be kind of weird. But, you know, if you really sell it seriously, they'll be like, oh,
yeah, I would say that.
I would say that.
No. Yeah. I mean, infants, children of believers are part of the covenant, as you would say.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That is all the follow-up that I have, Jim.
All right. Mamma mia. Last episode I mentioned a TV show I was watching called Last Man Standing. I talked about one of the characters on that show. She likes to make, what's that?
I think you have more follow-up than me.
Ah, I'm changing. One of the actresses on that show makes a lot of puns.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a funny little wink to the audience. She's so bad at delivering them. They're funny, but she knows it. And it's just great. And I couldn't think of her name. I called her That Woman. So That Woman is named Nancy Travis. That's Karen. The actress. Yes. Thank you, Karen. That's it for me. That's it for follow-up. Unless you have anything else, we'll go ahead and move on. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and play. Well, today is technically a FCU episode. So this is where we usually play a bit or a skit that is surely to be funny, but not really. Today we're going to play, we're going to replay an old bit of ours called Flogging Christmas Carol, the parody of the Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens that Dave and I did all those years ago. Very proud of it. Very funny. I think you all like it.
Critics are raving. It is easily David's best Patrick Stewart impression. And that was the only positive thing they had to say about it.
Oh, there's a couple of them.
It was pretty good.
I made a goof in it. I called you David, I think. David. No, I called you David McCookie.
Yeah, something like that.
Didn't I? Yeah, I think I did it once. I don't know where it was, but apparently that's kind of a funny thing that I did. And so there is a goof in there. As long as you forgive that, the rest will fall into place. But we'll go ahead and roll that right now.
Please stand by for a word from our sponsor.
More than enough of that. If you are a confessional Presbyterian who detests man-made ceremonies in what should be the pure gospel worship of the Reformed faith as established from the very beginnings of the Covenant of Grace, then this ad is for you. We've all had it happen before. We're minding our own business in the privacy of our own home when a knock is heard at the front door. Those evangelicals not content to keep their strange fire in the confines of their own kirks have come to your door, eager to obtrude their English popish ceremonies on ye and your kin. Darn Protestants, they ruined Protestantism. Well, we Scots have developed the solution. It's called the Wee Mighty Covenant Air Horn. It's got a wee size, but a mighty sound. It's small enough to fit easily on your keychain, but at 147 decibels, it's loud enough to temporarily deafen anyone within a 3-meter radius. I'll see your road to joy and raise you a silent night. You can carry it with you anywhere in case those carolers and their guerrilla tactics catch you unawares pinching pennies at the dollar store. You might expect this amazing device to be hundreds of dollars, but if you order now, you can get the Wee Mighty Covenant Air Horn for 3 easy payments of $9.95. Just call 707-99-TULIP and let them know you have a dispute against the English popish ceremonies obtruded upon the Kirk of Scotland. Supplies are limited. Call today.
David and Jim of the Lightest Form of Flogging podcast present to you, with disappointment and great reluctance, A Flogging Christmas Carol. Our story begins on a cold and snowy Christmas Eve night. Ebenezer McCookie is furiously working to finish his day's work. His lone employee, Bill Hassinger, is working in a cold anteroom whilst very sad and anxious. For everyone in town has gone home for Christmas Eve festivities, and he is stuck at work with his boss, who is not letting him go home. A knock at the front door sounds and interrupts Ebenezer McCookie from counting his money.
Oh,
Blasted humbug! Who could it be at this hour? I'm busy and have no patience for visitors. Quiet, all of you! If I hear another Christmas carol, I swear I'll make ice balls and throw them at your face! Leave my presence and bring your idol worship elsewhere! What in the blue blazes is that noise? Are you playing Christmas music in my establishment? Turn that blasphemous dreck off!
Yes, sir, Mr. Ebenezer McCookie?
I can't hear myself think! Turn this blasted music off! Turn it off! Turn it off!
Oh, I'm very sorry, sir. I was just trying to get into the mood. I prefer my Christmas music at a very loud volume.
What's going on in here anyway? Oh, what is that horrid smell?
Why, it's my essential oil, sir. I'm sorry if the aromas bring you displeasure.
It smells like a moldy hat fell in a vat of lemons. Blast it all!
Sir, I was hoping to go home soon, it being Christmas Eve and all.
Bah, humbug! There is too much work to do and not enough time to do it. No need to celebrate a false holy day such as Christmas anyhow, Bill. It's unbecoming. Get back to work, and I don't want to hear that blasted music anymore. Good day!
Okay, sir. Drop dead.
What was that?
Nothing.
And off Ebenezer McCookie went to his tiny apartment to spend the night alone and annoyed. He settled by his fireplace and read some of his Puritan paperbacks long into the night. After throwing a log cut from the town's Christmas tree on the fire, Ebenezer McCookie heard a curious and most strange noise. A noise that would herald the most magical Christmas Eve of all.
What is that? Hello? Who is there in my cold apartment where there is no Christmas? Bah, humbug!
David! It is I, your old podcast partner, Jim.
Spirit? Why do you interrupt my reading time?
Dude, I said it's me. You need to take a break from reading crusty old Scottish people anyway.
Jim? Is that you?
For like the ninth time, yes, it's me, Jim, your old podcasting partner, man.
Why are you making those noises?
It's more scary and funny this way.
Right.
David, when you and I podcasted together, our show was so bad and so awful, I was taken from this life to wander the earth forever, listening to our episode on politics with these dollar store earbuds.
Well, that's unpleasant. Didn't you die because you choked on a Little Debbie zebra cake?
Do you have to bring that up? You know how sensitive I am about those things.
I'm sorry. It must have been a huge cake.
David, you have a chance to avoid a similar fate. You must only relax a tiny bit on this Christmas thing. It's covenanting weird.
You're the weird one, celebrating an unauthorized holy day, and I don't eat zebra cakes.
Prepare yourself, for you shall be visited by three ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. Heed their words. And stop recording so many podcasts. Aren't you at like 9 now?
Seriously, I only do one other podcast.
Whatever. Adios, caballero.
And just like that, Jim vanished, and Ebenezer McCookie was left alone to ponder what just happened. He then fell into a deep slumber and drifted off into an adventure like no other. After some time, Ebenezer McCookie awoke to a dark apartment, his fire out, with just some smoldering coals left. And while he pondered his earlier encounter with Jim, the first spirit made his entrance.
Ooh. Ooh. hog, Ebenezer McCookie. Are you ready for your first trip?
Spirit, this cannot be real. Identify yourself at once to me.
Oh boy, a feisty one we got here today. I am the ghost of Christmas past, and I'm going to take you on a journey to your youth. Now, grab a hold of my coat and don't let go. This is going to get a bit bumpy.
Wait, what do you mean?
Wait! Spirit, we're flying through the air!
Thanks for pointing out the obvious. Would you stop squirming? This is hard to do, flying through the air and all.
Please put me down! This is most perilous!
Would you relax? If you don't calm down, I'll drop you like a hot potato. Ah, we have arrived. Here, brace yourself. We are going to land.
Please put me down! This is most perilous!
That was, a little rough, Spirit.
Look, Ebenezer McCookie, you may recognize this place.
Oh, why, this is my childhood home. There's me opening a present. My parents are on the sofa.
This is great. Thanks for the present. Can I open it?
Sure, son. Go ahead and open it.
Wow, a new Eagles jersey and some baggy pants. This is the best Christmas ever.
You bet, kid.
You see, Ebenezer, a nice Christmas from your youth. Now, don't you think you should bring this Christmas cheer back into your life?
Nonsense. This is my past, and I'm grateful for it, but I don't celebrate Christmas anymore. Certainly not a holiday where I need to have a pine tree in my living room that represents some weird popish nonsense.
What?
And what's the deal with people wearing elf hats? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. That alone should drive people away from this man-made holy day.
Well, that is pretty dumb, but you should reconsider.
I'd rather have a live badger released in my pants than celebrate Christmas.
Suit yourself.
Hey, while we're using the Wayback Machine, could you perhaps send me back a bit further to when the Christmas was illegal to celebrate in America? I should very much like to see a December 25th from that era.
Wow. Maybe some other time. Time to fly, little Puritan man.
Whoa! This is so unnecessary! Too fast, Spirit!
Shush! I'll release you to your bed. It's been real. I'll feel the same.
Ebenezer McCookie landed on his bed and couldn't believe what just happened. He figured it was just a dream and tried to go back to sleep when the second spirit came upon him.
Who is that? What trickery is this?
Greetings, Ebenezer McCookie. I am the ghost of Christmas present. I'm here to show you Christmas as it's happening in your town, in the very home of your employee, Bill Hassinger.
I don't need to see that. Besides, I am not going to be moved in my stance against your papist rituals, and I'll certainly not be convinced by some emotional appeal. My conscience is held captive to the...
You'll shut your mouth good and tight and grab hold of my robe. We're going on a magic carpet ride, old man. Climb aboard.
I don't think I want to.
Buckle up, Buttercup. Let's ride.
Why do we have to go so fast? Why are we so high?
Would you be still? This is really hard to do. I've only done this like once before, so stop fussing.
No!
Spirit, we are in Bill Hassinger's home. Can they see us?
No, we are invisible, only here to observe. Now let's see what the Hassinger's got cooked up.
Oh, sorry I'm late, honey. Ebenezer McCookie had me stay late at the office. What do we have for Christmas Eve dinner?
Well, my failure of a husband, I have some hamburger helper and some juice boxes because we can't afford anything decent. Why do you have to keep squandering our money on your weird ideas?
I believe you are being a bit harsh, and your demeanor is not very much in keeping with the Christmas spirit, I must say. Besides, Ebenezer McCookie is going to give me a big Christmas bonus. I just know it in my heart.
He sent a letter. It's canceled this year. Instead, he sent us a book about Scottish covenanting.
What? Oh, I'm so very sad.
I'll be in the kitchen drinking heavily.
Father, why is it that you are crying so?
Oh, nothing, Tiny Tim, my beloved son. We just can't afford the surgery to fix your weird crippled leg and support your mom's Chardonnay habit. Oh, I just wish Ebenezer McCookie was more of a Christmas guy. That's all I really want.
You hear that? Sounds like they're in need of some Christmas charity.
I don't need Christmas to be charitable. The reason I didn't give him a bonus this year is because Bill asked me to invest in his business ideas and it nearly bankrupted me. That guy is quite the piece of work, let me tell you.
Well, maybe so. But we are here to change your views on Christmas. So what's it gonna be, good buddy?
What is it with people and Christmas? What basis does anyone have to celebrate this holiday, pagan, papist, or otherwise, that is not sanctioned by the Holy Word? We do not add to the worship as prescribed in the Bible, my spirit friend. Besides, I couldn't do the whole Christmas card thing. Too much politics involved and people getting their precious little feelings hurt when they don't get one.
Well, you're right there. Come, let's fly back. Perhaps the ghost of Christmas future will fare better. Let's ride!
The ghost of Christmas Present returned his charge back to his home, and Ebenezer McCookie waited on the arrival of the third spirit. After some time had passed, a dark, hooded figure appeared at Ebenezer McCookie's bedside and beckoned him to stand.
So, you are the third spirit? Come to test me? Show me something? We're not going to fly anywhere, are we? I can't do that a third time. Do you talk? No? What's it gonna be, Jack?
The silent spirit raised a finger to his mouth and bid Ebenezer to be silent. The ghost of Christmas Future then smiled and snapped his fingers, and everything went black. Ebenezer McCookie woke up in a snowy field in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The spirit beckoned him to follow, and both started to walk. Ebenezer followed through hills and fields, wondering and waiting to see what the ghost of Christmas Future was to show him. They finally found their way into an Amish town and came upon a home with a horse and carriage in front. Pondering what this meant, Ebenezer McCookie went inside.
Spirit, why are we here? What does this mean?
The spirit pointed at a man sitting at a desk in a corner.
Spirit, why does he look like me? Blessed be, it is me, but very old. Are you telling me I'm going to be an Amish man if I don't change my views on Christmas? What's he doing? Is he writing Amish romance novels? This is what's to become of me? How dreadful, Spirit!
The ghost of Christmas Future nodded in the affirmative.
This is most unhelpful. I like their furniture and pies, but I'm never moving to Lancaster. I'll consider it a neckbeard. Tell me, Spirit, while I have you, could you show me the far future? You guys have been flying me everywhere to all sorts of far-off location. How about far futures? I mean, the eternal state. When the church casts off all her idolatrous will worship, I should very much like to see a December the 25th in the eternal state.
The ghost of Christmas Future, normally silent when showing his charges their sorry futures, was moved to finally speak for the very first time to Ebenezer after his peculiar challenge.
What?
What's that, Spirit? You don't have the skills to debate me? You would lose anyway. You may be clothed in a black robe, but I think you're yellow, and you ain't got any guts.
The ghost of Christmas Future put down his scythe and got into a taekwondo stance.
You want to square up, eh? Why don't you come at me and get a piece, Jack?
Knee!
After they both lay exhausted on the floor, a bright light appeared and a voice echoed from within it.
You know, in all the Christmas Carol stories I have ever heard, Scrooge never got into a fight with the Ghost of Christmas Future, yet you managed to pull it off. Well done.
Jim, is that you again?
Yes, I've been watching this whole time. I guess my big elaborate plan has failed.
Look, Jim, if I agree to consider Christmas, can I go home? This is becoming a most unpleasant practice. Morning is in, like, 20 minutes?
Yeah, okay, great. Whatever.
Jim snapped his fingers and all went dark. And then, on a bright, sunny, crisp Christmas morning, Ebenezer McCookie awoke to a fresh disposition and found himself ready for a change.
What a wonderful night! I've learned so much! I am filled with so much cheer and love and goodwill toward men! I must tell everyone!
Ebenezer McCookie then gathered all the townspeople to his house to deliver a most important message. They all waited, ready to receive the fruit of Ebenezer's most propitious evening.
I have something very important to tell you all, and that is, Christmas is cancelled! All feasting is forbidden! All Christmas trees will be burned! Christmas cookies thrown away! And celebrators will be fined 5 shillings and slapped with a wet noodle!
And there was much lamenting and weeping in the town. And Ebenezer McCookie lived happily ever after.